Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you. This is From a Stranger to a Stranger. My name is Issa Martel. Today is Saturday, the 14th of Dhul Hijjah, 1442 Hijri year, which corresponds to Saturday, July 24th, 2021. So, this past week was Eid al-Adha, which I talked about last time a bit. And if you celebrate Islamic holidays, well, inshallah, you had a good one. And if you don't, well, perhaps you should. I was talking about it to my kids, right? And it's fascinating that this day is a big event in both Christianity and Judaism as well. Yet in Islam, it's the only, in Islam, it's only celebrated in Islam. I guess that's how I should say it. You know, which is something, and that was the day Abraham was going to sacrifice his son, and instead, Allah, or God, told him not to, and to sacrifice a lamb instead. So that's what the sacrifice is for Muslims on that day. It's generally a thing where people go and sacrifice goats, or sheep, or cows, or whatever. It's the day of sacrifice. And, you know, I just find it interesting that while this was such a big event in the Old Testament, it's not even talked about or celebrated or acted upon in any way, that I know of anyway. I mainly know things from kind of a overall Christian perspective, but I was raised specifically as Catholic. So there might be some things I don't know, but I have never heard anyone celebrate this day until I became a Muslim. So, you know, it's something to think about. And for me personally, it is a I'm going to say a sign, but I don't mean it as like some sign from God type of thing. I just mean in a general sign, though you could argue that all signs are from God, but I don't mean it in that manner. Just like a sign that Islam is meant to be a holistic religion that is like a string that runs through humanity. We don't think from an Islamic perspective, these people were Muslim as well. Abraham, like all the Israelites, all the Christians when Jesus was around, Jesus, all the prophets, from the perspective of Islam, all those people were Muslims, due to the definition of what the word Muslim means, being one who submits their will to God, the Creator, Allah. So they're all considered Muslims. And And Islam is the single thread that goes from the beginning of humanity through it. Yes, well, these people were Jews and Christians, as we call them now, but at their time, they weren't called Christians, you know. I guess we can say that Judaism, I guess, is the religion of the Jews. I wonder when Judaism started. Like, when was it called? When did it start to be called Judaism? In any case, yeah, so it's fascinating to me that these people don't celebrate this day. They might have some sort of celebration. I don't know. This what I'm about to say is just a thought off the top of my head right now and not based on anything other than perhaps this might be something. I believe in Jerusalem, I believe they have Abraham's tomb, isn't it, in Jerusalem? I believe so. Yeah, the Cave of the Patriarchs. That's what I thought. Let's see. Yeah, so it's in Jerusalem. So because it's in, what my point was going to be, because it's in Jerusalem, perhaps there is some sort of cultural celebration on this day that the Jews do. I can see that. And there might even be something that Jews do on this day as well, besides that. But I've never heard any Christians celebrate this day or even know what day on the calendar this day is. You know what I mean? So to me, it's fascinating and interesting to me that in Islam we have the date, like this happened on this day in the calendar. So that's pretty fascinating to me. And I believe the Jews have that as well. Or they know all the dates of the holidays and when this happened. And I guess it's like I have this fascination of time. If you haven't heard me talk about this or noticed it since I start everything with time. And like it's like so from a Jewish and an Islamic perspective, like time is something that you know, like you know the dates and you know these things, and both of these play off, not play off in a negative sense, but use, I guess, like the moon and the sun setting and the sun rising as things that are part of your daily routine and part of the religion itself. And that's what I meant by a holistic type of thing, because you're using the natural things in nature and natural law to kind of like guide you through the day and to mark points of time. And that doesn't happen in Christianity. So it might. Now, you can might argue if you're a Christian and listening to this, like, oh yeah, it does in this way, and stuff like that. But and there is, yes, there is the calendar, because there is obviously Christmas and Easter, and these are big, the biggest holidays in Christianity. But those dates aren't. I mean, like, it's. I've never believed personally that Jesus was born in December. So there's arguments saying that he wasn't in this type of thing. So it's not really the day, you know. Do we really know the day Jesus was born? No, I'm not, you know, I'm not claiming to either. And I don't think there's any sort of Islamic hadith or text or anything that says what day he was born on, but there are the descriptions of when he was born. Do not match the middle of winter. So, So there is that. But in any case, yeah, it is interesting. And it's interesting that, like, here's another thing. Where are all the, you might not believe if you're not religious and listening to this, you might not believe that these prophets existed or were, if these are their graves or not. But it's fascinating that all the graves and the tombs of biblical prophets are in Muslim lands, right? Is that something to, like, think about? Like, oh, okay. Because if this is just like a, you know, if you're going to claim, I guess besides the Tomb of the Patriarchs here in Jerusalem, because that is in, like, common land, but it was Muslim lands until, you know, the UN decided to intervene. But in any case, all the prophets are in Muslim countries or lands of Islam. So if you're going to say that, you know, use something to say, okay, what are some things that might mark this being the what they're claiming to be legit? Well, you can, you know, point to this and saying, well, all the prophets they talk about are in the lands they're talking about. Like, you know, they control the regions where all these prophets are, right? And, you know, why doesn't Christianity, you know, have this? I mean, I guess you can, if you're really deep into, like, some conspiratorial type of thing, I guess you can make something up that says, you know, the Middle East. And I remember hearing this type of thing back a while ago, years ago, that, you know, that we're still in a crusade and, you know, in the grand, big Illuminati type of eye, the wars in the Middle East are just, you know, a continual extension of the Crusades, and they're trying to get back all this land, you know, and control it, which it does kind of seem that that's what the U.S. is doing now, you know, in our foreign policy, is just to become the, you know, the imperial takeover of the world. But in, you know, throughout history, up until now, it's been controlled by Muslims. Now you can probably come up and say that, well, maybe they, you know, made that up, but these graves have been in these places since before Islam, before Prophet Muhammad, you know, these graves were there. So it's not like the Muslims went out and found these prophets' graves and then claimed them to be prophets and used that as some sort of point to the try to push that, you know, this proves that Islam is true. And these graves here do not prove that, you know, it's just an interesting note that these graves are here. And, you know, the people that control the graves and take care of them are Muslims. So, you know, that shows, you know, if you put, you know, think about it more, kind of on a next level, you know, it shows the love that Muslims have for the prophets, you know, that, they honor the graves and take care of them. And for people in general, the graves, graves and stuff in Islam is like an interestingly fascinating, two words I use a lot, I notice, interesting and fascinating, that thing. It's it seems like, I don't know, it seems with Muslims, maybe it's just anywhere but America. Maybe that's what I'm about to say, is that here the cemeteries and stuff seem very, like, dead. When you go in it, it's, like, sterile and, like, artificial feeling, this type of thing. But when you go overseas, particularly in a place where there's Muslims, I think and Jewish people, I believe, is a similar thing. I don't know about Europe so much because I've been to many countries in Europe, but I have not ever gone to a cemetery there. But I have gone to a cemetery in the two Muslim countries I have lived in, which was Morocco and Saudi Arabia for a couple months. And the cemeteries are different. They don't feel like artificial. Like, and when you think of, so when you're buried in Islam, you're not buried in a coffin, and there's no, the process of what happens after death to your physical body is very different than anything in what we do in Western type of burial. And I'm only going to speak from a Catholic Christian burial here because this is specifically what I know, and I happen to know the funeral director. His son actually went to school with me, so of the place where I'm about to talk about. So, you know, the bodies are pretty much mummified without the wrapping of, with the mummy wrap, but, you know, all your fluids are taken out, your organs are taken out, and your body is essentially mummified in the old, you know, you're basically stuffed, and they put fluids into your body and have to, like, put makeup on you and, you know, dress you in a suit or a dress or something or whatever you're going to be buried in, and then put you in this coffin that's sealed shut. So it's, you know, in there. And then that coffin is put inside a concrete, like, thing in the ground, and then that's sealed shut. so there's all these, like, tombs, you know, underground, in a similar sense to how, you know, humans did this type of thing to people they revered in history, like, for example, like a pharaoh or something like this, right? Who we find their tombs. Now, granted, these are, in modern day, these are much smaller things, but I'm talking about the process of, you know, the process of removing your organs and this type of thing. But in Islam, and I believe in Judaism as well, you are just wrapped and buried. So the cemeteries there, and when I happened to be living in Morocco, a friend of mine, that I had befriended there, died. So we went to his funeral. So I saw, like, I participated in an Islamic funeral in an Islamic country. So it was just a different experience, but the feeling was also different. Like the feeling, at least for me. And I haven't really met anyone who has told me otherwise, that, like, the feeling at every Christian funeral I have gone to is, it just seems hollow and empty. And while people are trying to you know, give, say things or whatever they do at the wake, this type of thing, it just doesn't feel like warm, I guess would be a better, like if we're having a feeling, it doesn't have a warm feeling. It has a, that's what I mean by like sterile, like cold, sterile, hollow type of feeling when you're there. So I don't know why that is. I'm not claiming to know or say that it's, you know, anything specific that causes this, but I do feel that having your body, like not just having your body wrapped in a cloth and buried is, you know, natural type of way that humans are supposed to finish their physical existence. You know, you decompose back into the earth, like everything else that dies, you know. So, and like how people were doing for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, how people would bury people is in this manner. So, I don't know. I don't know how we got on that, like, big rant. But what I wanted to really talk about was that I watched the Challenger documentary special thing on Netflix. I think it's like four or five episodes. It was pretty good. It documented basically the space program during the shuttle era, or era, I guess. Era. And it documented that. And one thing, if you were alive and an American in America during this time period, NASA was pretty much awesome. And the astronauts were kind of like celebrities. And it was a much bigger thing in the consciousness of all Americans than it is now. Like now people don't know anything about space or even know who astronauts are, like their names and stuff like this, or this type of thing. The general population knows nothing about anything to deal with space. But back then, everyone did, and the thing that was interesting is that for the Challenger launch, all the kids in America watched it live. Like, this has to have been, like hundreds of thousands of kids and adults, like, watched this thing live happen, you know, and then it blows up. It blew up. Everyone got to see live, and so this event was different than, say, like 9/11. Because for 9/11, it was just like a regular morning, and then like catastrophe happened. And it was like intentional thing. So, but prior to that moment of the planes hitting the buildings, it was a regular day. Where in the Challenger launch, everybody had been following this for months. And this was like a big, momentous, triumphant thing. That, you know, so people had off of, I think I stayed home from school because I remember watching it on our home TV and not in school. So I think that maybe my mom had told us to stay home that day to watch it or something. I can see her doing that. Yeah, so you know, everybody watched this thing, and it you know, blew up. And it was a big thing. It took NASA, like, I think it was like 34, 35, maybe 36 months or something to redesign these rockets, the solid core, the solid fuel rockets. What happened, and they talk about this in the documentary, was that the O-ring on one of the seals failed, and that's what caused this to happen. One thing that we never, that everybody knows about the explosion, right? But when that happened, people were told that, you know, it's impossible for someone to survive that explosion. What we don't really know, and that's not like easy, that's not out there, is that they did survive the explosion. So they survived the initial explosion, and they found the cockpit at the bottom of the ocean. They did survive it. And, you know, how, and how they proved that they were alive. This part isn't in the documentary. They kind of don't talk about them surviving. They just say they found the cockpit, and the mother or the sister, the documentary kind of centers around the teacher who was going up. And so her sister was on, and I believe her mom was in the documentary too, and as well as the spouses of the astronauts and a bunch of people are in this documentary. You know, they just say they found it at the bottom of the water. I forget how long later, and she was just like, it was like horrible to know that. But if you research this, look it up. They survived the explosion, and how they know they survived the explosion is because they had oxygen tanks, and they're like emergency oxygen tanks, and how the system operated was that they're switched on by the person sitting behind you. And so I guess when they found the cockpit, like three of the switches were turned on. So that means that's the how they prove or theorize that they survived the explosion, because they turned on the oxygen, the emergency oxygen. And they probably attempted to navigate this thing, which is impossible. They probably didn't know the whole back of the space shuttle was blown to smithereens, so they're just plummeting around in this cockpit. And you know, the official thing is that they state that they probably blacked out from the G forces or whatever, and then died of like oxygen loss or something like this. But the whole thing is that we could maybe, who know, you know, like maybe if they would have got to them like that morning, they would have survived. But I think, so that's like thinking about it now, you know, here we are, however, 40 years later, you know, thinking like about this. But at the time, when you watch this, I mean, you're thinking there's no way possible that anyone could have survived that. Like if you, and when you're watching it in real time, like as it was happening, you're in a state of shock as well. And the guy who does the countdown at NASA, or did during back then, he's on the documentary too, and there's like footage of him when it blew up in NASA Command Center, and you know, his face, he's just like, all of them are just like gas faced and are just like, have no idea what to do or nothing, because it was an like nobody ever could have predicted that it would explode catastrophically like this, which is even weird to think about now, that you wouldn't have some contingency plan in place. But at the same time, that kind of like points to how NASA was back then, that they didn't have anything that ever failed, you know, nothing. They saved, like, the astronauts, they saved them previous, you know, before in the past. They got people to land on the moon and brought them back. So there wasn't any, like, big epic failure until this. You know, so, and it's a lot to think about, but the documentary is really good. The thing that's, when you watch it, though, I mean, you know all these people are going to die. And you know how they die. But when you're watching the videos of them, you get this weird feeling, because in all the videos, they're like happy and excited to do this and everything. And everybody was like, it was just like this big, everybody was like, the whole country, particularly all the kids, you know, that are like, oh man, this is a regular person. This is like gonna, you know, we're living, going into the future now. Like she wanted to do, or they, it's not that she wanted to do, they had planned to do 2 science lessons from outer space, stream it live back to Earth, and have like all the kids watch this and participate in this, right? So how, imagine, so that was like my generation, right, who went to school in the 80s. So I was in 4th or 5th grade when this happened. I think I was in 4th grade, maybe. So you see how, imagine like how big of an impact that would have had on all of the kids then, like to promote science and to promote like thinking like, man, we have humanity in outer space and I got my science lesson from the space shuttle. I mean, that would have been so cool, you know? And so that's when all these kids and everything were watching this live, you know, it was just like, what? Like, your brain couldn't process it. It was similar, similar to what happened, the same, I just thought of this, the same effect happened to me on 9/11, because on 9/11, I used to be a puppeteer for a couple years, and the company I worked for, we were doing a show in New York. So we were not too far from the towers. We weren't in Manhattan. We were on the other side of the water. But I remember people coming. We were at an elementary school, and I remember parents coming and pulling their kids out because they were, after the first tower went down, parents started showing up and taking their kids out of the school. But that morning before we went to the school, we were at the hotel, and I remember the guy who was my partner, he was taking a shower, and I, like we did every morning, is put the news on to see what's going on. And the first plane had already hit the tower, and then I watched the second plane hit live on the TV there. And when it hit, like, there was a moment when, like, my brain couldn't, like, put that into, like, couldn't process it, or, you know, like, what actually just happened there? Did a plane, because you're looking at this massive object, and you know, come in and hit the building, and it just seems like such a unreal thing, because you're I believe this is probably what's happening in your brain. You're seeing a big plane, and you know that's full of people, right? And then you see this big tower, and you know there's that's full of people too. And then you see this plane hit it and a massive explosion. So it's like, I think it's the scale in physical space of this happening. And like the larger the scale, the more like horrific it is to process. Like you're watching massive epic size structures collide and explode and this type of thing. So, you know, you've never seen anything like that ever before in your life. So you're witnessing something that you've never seen. So your brain's trying to process it and go through all this stuff. But there's that moment of like, what the heck just happened? Was that, you know, my brain is like stuttering or something to try to process like, yes, this just happened. So it was like that with the Challenger. But with the Challenger, like with 9/11, that happened in the morning. Like I said, it was a normal day, so nobody was paying attention or anything. So the only people that saw it live, either the people were in Manhattan or the if you had watched the news in the morning like I happened to be doing, and which mainly regulated it to everybody in the Northeast because of the time zones, right? So the West Coast or even in the Midwest, they might have not have even been up and doing their morning routine yet. But the difference then being that with the Challenger, you know, everybody was watching it. Like everybody, the vast majority of elementary schools had this thing on live TV. So I don't know how many kids watch this thing live explode. And they mentioned this in the documentary that for many kids, that was the first time ever having to process like death and see something like this, you know, like, oh, wait, so they just blew up. Everybody just was obliterated, you know, and for kids, that was never addressed. Like that aspect was never addressed. Like nowadays, they'd probably have therapists and stuff like this that you would call or whatever. But back then they didn't have nothing. You just had to deal with it. So from a different perspective, what kind of like effect did that have on basically this whole generation of kids that watched it, including would be my generation, Generation X is what we proclaim to be or what we were called. So, you know, there's that, like, what did it stunt? Was that moment so jarring in our psyche that it stunted? Like none of my generation then pushed the space race anymore, or very few, maybe like it just trickled, you know, to the handful of people who actually continued to go work at NASA and everything. But the public in general just is like, eh, you know, was that the trigger point of this to happen? You know, and what brought all this up, right, is because of how the public is, or not the public, a certain demographic of the public is treating these heads of companies going into outer space. Elon Musk and Virgin Galactic guy and Amazon dude and his brother. Like, they're ripping this. Literally tearing. They, like, are mad at these people. They don't like them, I guess, because they're billionaires. I'm just scrolling through here to see. So, this guy, I don't even know why some of these people are linked to me on social media, but I'm going to try to find real quick. a guy I know. They're just putting all sorts of hatred on these launches. I'm trying to scroll through and find, but I seem to not be able to right now, and I'm just babbling to not have there be dead air when I could just pause it and look. All right, here we go. So there was a meme that had the three of them on it, and it says, "The existence of a space race between billionaires is a clear sign that these people aren't being taxed nearly enough," right? So their point, I guess, is that obviously they want these people don't pay taxes like the rest of us, and that whole spiel. But I mean, it's not that they're like dodging the tax. I mean, the tax code is set up in the country, and I find it difficult to believe that these people would not, if they had money, not also do things, or basically to pay as little tax as possible. Because right now, as average regular people, you try to pay as little tax as possible, right? So why, as you move up the ladder in wealth, would you not want to continue to pay as little tax as possible, right? If they were going like around and doing things to intentionally like not pay taxes, then that would be something different, right? Here we go, some comments. I'm just hoping it's a one-way trip for them. I hope they rot in space. They can't rot in a vacuum. Let's just surprise them with a GoFundMe for a trip to the sun. I'm sure we could raise the money. Good God, I hate them. And then there's a meme that has Picard, and he's saying, "I want to use my privilege to help others." And I believe that's Q whispering in his ear, "Fly to space." So that's the thing. This is the mentality. And I'm going to just say that this is liberal, far, I don't know which direction, but this is kind of a liberal mentality that if you have money, you are obligated to help everybody else who doesn't have money, right? That's what you have to do. It's the quote unquote, it's the right thing. It's the good thing. It's this. No, you don't have to do that, And these people, and the mind-boggling thing is that I go back to, look how we were, right? Look how we used to be with regards to outer space, in the 80s and stuff. And these people were alive during that time period. And it was, they were probably all watching the same thing that I watched, And maybe they were so affected by this and wanted to do this, like, oh man, if I have that money, I'm going to do this. And you have a chunk of the population hating on them for doing this, right? But our government's not doing it, right? I mean, I don't know. And I feel a lot of these people who, someone made a comment when I had posted something about this on Facebook, and a friend of mine had said, well, that it's because they don't pay taxes. And I was like, well, they don't make the tax code. And then it's, well, they quote-unquote corporations do, you know, lobbying and everything, which is true. But once again, whose fault is that? If we're gonna place a blame on something, right? It has to come down to you, like the people, or us, if you know, you the listener, or us, if I'm gonna include myself, and letting laws and letting the people who we vote into office make policies like this. So, yes, I'm sure the taxes are written to benefit the wealthy like this, but that is different than wealthy people not paying taxes. Because these people pay taxes. A wealthy person who didn't pay taxes, you can have who didn't pay taxes and got busted. Wesley Snipes, perfect example. Didn't pay taxes, got busted. But he didn't pay. He had the money. And I forget the reasoning or whatever, but it's irrelevant. But he had the money and actually didn't pay it. That's these people who are against the billionaires are talking with that same mentality. Well, they have money. They don't pay taxes. They're not paying taxes like the rest of us. But, you know, I don't want to sound like a prick, but they're not like the rest of us. They're different. That's why they have money. You know, so I mean, no, that shouldn't, you know, give them any sort of, you know, privilege other than the privileges that come with having wealth. But, you know, they're doing something or whatever different than the rest of us. And, you know, I don't know. It's just something that makes me further not like that aspect of the left is how they go at this type of thing. You know. So we'll see what happens. I personally am super excited that these guys are doing this, and I think it's awesome. And if it takes them doing it, and here's another thing. If you don't want these people to do this, right, then you have to vote against us going to war for 20 years in Afghanistan, right? How much money did that cost that could have been funded into, like, programs like NASA, which would then you wouldn't need, the space race wouldn't be between private citizens, right? We would just be dominating it. You know, like, you can argue, like, whether or not the government can actually have a program that would do something like that, but we did for a while. Yeah, it's different now, etc. But the point is that it could be federally funded, right? If we, you know, didn't spend money on these other things that we do overseas and this type of stuff. And I remember someplace else, someone saying that they should put all that money to solve world hunger and this, but it's not your responsibility to do that as a private citizen. Yes, you can do that, right? You can, and whomever said that, you may think if that was in your position, you know, you might do that, but you can't like superimpose your what you think is morally correct or whatever and onto other people, you know? And that's something that, I mean, everyone does to a degree, right? We do all have some sort of morals and this type of thing, but the projection of what is moral correctness is, to me, like, I just don't like it. I don't like when, and it's always the same mindset of people, this leftist thing then now pushes the, it's the right thing to do, you know, it's a right, according to you, it might be the right thing to do, but according to me, it's not the right thing to do. So don't try to, like, push, you know, this moral ideology onto everybody else within this, like, subversive type of tactic or whatever. Anyway, I don't know. I'm talking way too long about this. We're almost going to hit an hour, and I can save this maybe for a different time or a different topic. Think of some things to talk about this. Anyway, check out that Challenger video documentary. It's on Netflix. It's pretty good. If you're alive, if you were a kid back then, it's pretty decent, and shows you some back behind the scenes stuff. And the main point of the whole documentary is that they believed it was going to explode. The engineers who were the engineers of the rockets, but they got trumped and by their superior the day of the launch from pressure by the launch being delayed up until that time, and NASA looking bad in the marketing campaign. So it's really fascinating. Like I said, check it out. Till next time, thanks for listening to this point. Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you.